really excited to be here today and talk about the work we're doing in Washington State. And I think the presentations that Stephanie and Michelle did a great job to kind of set up what is the problem and what are some potential approaches to the problem. And now we can really talk about what is one state example about some things we're trying to do with this data and these possible approaches to make a difference and address vaccine hesitancy. So I really want to start off with acknowledging that this work we're going to be talking about represents a lot of different partners in Washington State. And you can see they're listed up there. But I think one of the things that's really important I want you to take home with this is when you're going to really dive in and start addressing vaccine hesitancy, it's not something you do sitting at your desk by yourself. It really depends upon getting all these people to the table and having everybody ready to be at the table. We've been talking about this problem in Washington for as long as I've been here and probably longer, but I think we've really gotten to a unique point over the last couple of years where everybody was recognizing, I have a role in this and I need to be part of the solution, and we're ready to sit down together to think about what could we do. And you know, among this list of people, we also, the bottom bullet says other community partners, and we really made an effort to reach out to some non-traditional partners. We have a pretty big naturopathic medicine community in Washington that people incorrectly assume sometimes they're not supportive of immunizations and they don't immunize in their practices, which isn't the case, we found. And so we had them at the table too. So just want to really encourage you to think about this as a community approach. So a lot of this background stuff Stephanie and Michelle have already laid out, but a couple things specific to Washington is we probably, I think, in other states on the West Coast or kind of Rocky Mountains and West, really probably are some of the forerunners in what's going on with vaccine hesitancy and what is the problem. I've seen at least twice and maybe more, including in some big featured sessions, the slide of the exemption rates in Washington State that show that we have some of the highest, if not the highest, exemption rates in the country from school and child care immunization requirements. And we know there's vaccine safety concerns and hesitancy, and not just among parents, but definitely among healthcare providers too. And we all know the media problems that have been going on. I mentioned bringing multiple partners to the table, and one of the other benefits is you can really stretch limited resources. So everybody came to the table for this planning process we're talking about with some money they could contribute to the planning process. So we are working on kind of a social marketing approach to thinking about it, and I think one of the incorrect assumptions people hear when they hear that term social marketing is they think it's a communication campaign, or they think it's a new PSA campaign. And actually, our healthcare provider community, that was kind of where they started off as well, somewhat like, well, we need to do a PSA campaign because Jenny McCarthy's doing a PSA campaign. We need a spokesperson. And we sat down and we actually hired a social marketing expert, Nancy Lee, who is one of the leaders in the nation and happens to be lives in Washington State, through kind of her approach to social marketing. And it's really about applying traditional marketing principles to influence target audience behaviors. And like I said, it's more than just a communication strategy. So here is the steps that we went through in this planning process. You can see the reference for a book by Nancy Lee and one of her colleagues. But what I want to talk about is we worked through this planning process over about an 8-month period where we would kind of focus, had about monthly meetings and focus in on each one of these steps. We reached out to, like I said, many, many different partners. We did a lot of situation analysis, doing some SWOT exercises, doing literature review, scanning of efforts that are going on, what is CDC, what's the National Vaccine Program Office doing, what's the literature saying, looking at California's I Choose campaign, and other things. we spent some time on developing our target audience profile and then factors influencing the adoption of the behavior, which is what Jenny's going to go into more here in a minute. And I just want to end my part on that we really work to narrow down our target audience as we talked about this this problem, because you could go a million different directions with this. Who are you trying to reach and what are you trying to do? So as far as parents, we really narrowed down to hesitant parents of children under two and working to get their immunizations on time. Stephanie mentioned the group of parents that in the end will immunize on time, but they're kind of tweaking the schedule or picking and choosing until they're fully immunized, and that's definitely a pretty common thing happening in our state. And we really wanted to build upon that and say, you know, there's other people out there who are taking the alternative schedule language and owning it, but you know, there is flexibility within the recommended schedule, and we can work with parents to find them be comfortable, to help them be comfortable, and that was one of the guiding principles we've had. And reaching the other two is reaching out to providers and really wanting to influence their behavior and give them communication strategies so they can, we know parents are coming in with tough questions, so they can be ready and engaged, because I think too often providers are, that intimidates them or they're nervous or they don't want to have that dialogue with parents, or as we all know, they don't have time to have that dialogue. So how can we help them be able to do that? And one other thing I want to say before I hand it off to Jenny, and I think something that we're still struggling with in Washington, is how can we really embrace and acknowledge and accept the opinions that are coming to us from parents and why they're questioning. I think we've been working on this, but still even sometimes within our group, I think we undercut that and don't give it the, you know, the acceptance and that I think we really need to have if over time we're gonna move forward and address this problem. And Jenny's gonna come talk about the audience research we did.
Thanks, Michelle. And I want to stress is when we came up with this target market, really our campaign, the goal of our campaign is to acknowledge parents' concerns in it and encourage evidence-based vaccine decision-making by parents and really want an ongoing dialogue. We see that happening between the provider and parents, and I think both Stephanie and Michelle outlined that actually validates the strategy that we came up with and mirrors a lot of the qualitative research that we did with both the provider community and the parent community. So we're starting off, this is just a slide about the insights we already had going into this with the provider community, that there's an increasing disincentive for providers to engage in the clinic setting around the issue of vaccine hesitancy. They feel like it takes up more time for each patient. There's reimbursement issues around consultation and talking with parents about vaccines. And often providers are telling us they feel unprepared to have these conversations and are challenged by it. So we went ahead and came up with a concept of how do we create a provider engagement tool? What can we do to actually help and incentivize having this a proactive conversation in the clinic setting? So we came up with a concept we're calling the AAA, which is a communication guideline for providers that is the ask, acknowledge, and advise. So this is really what we took forward in our research with providers, our interviews that we had with providers, and online survey we did with parents. We talked to 30 providers, which includes both prenatal care providers and pediatric care providers, so OBs, family physicians, naturopaths, and pediatricians. Overall, they really like the concept of having these guidelines to use in their clinic setting along with a provider toolkit. They saw that there were the things they liked was that it shows respect for the parents that they're talking to. It builds rapport, that it's a straightforward and proactive way to have this conversation. Some of the challenges or things that they had concerns about were that, is this opening Pandora's box? That it, as a provider, it might be hard for me to empathize with the concerns that parents bring to me around vaccines, and potentially doesn't assert authority as in my role as a provider. With parents, again, we have already preliminary insights about this target market of parents who are vaccine hesitant. For parents, the schedule's overwhelming. Certainly the media heightens those concerns. This is a group where demographics are, they're higher income, they're college educated. Also, they're predisposed to questioning recommendations regarding vaccines, that they already have questions that they're walking into the provider office with. They have concerns. With this group, we did an online survey, and 440, we also focused on women and that were either pregnant or have infants who are less than 6 months old. 449 women took the survey. We further screened out the women who took the survey to those who specifically responded to a question we had about their comfort level related to their immunization decisions. So if they check that as somewhat comfortable or not at all comfortable, they took the longer survey because we were really wanting to hone in on would this concept of a provider using these communication guidelines, how would they feel about that? We also wanted to know a little bit more about their decision making around immunizations, as well as who and what they consider trusted sources of information around immunization. So again, like with the providers, the concept of the AAA guideline was, they were open to that and saw opportunities in both and challenges. They liked that it started with the parent's perspective, that it would actually build in time to discuss the schedule with the provider, and that it would actually feel like they would be listened to and advised in an unbiased way. Certainly they had concerns that, and I love the third bullet, the second bullet. Providers may not know as much as parents on the subject. And I think this resonates with the target market. We hear this often, feel like the public health isn't for them, that they know more about immunizations. I'm not going to go into details on this slide. The second bullet is what I wanted to point out, that over 50% of these women were making decisions about immunization before or during pregnancy. And I think that really honed in on our strategy about we really need to, there's a great opportunity with the prenatal care providers to start having this conversation with parents before their baby's born. So working with OBs and midwives. So this research led us to developing these strategies, which really is this provider toolkit, which includes this AAA communication guideline for the pediatric care provider and the AA guideline, which is a very short and condensed version for the prenatal care provider, because what we knew from talking to OBs was this isn't, you need to make this compelling for me to have this conversation. This isn't my expertise, and this isn't, in some ways, I don't see this as my job. So we have to package it in a way that's going to make it reasonable for them to use. Also, this idea of creating an alliance, so bringing statewide organizations together as the trusted voice. And again, how do we, really our campaign is about shifting social norms. So how do we bring a statewide voice to this issue with trusted organizations at the table with the same consistent message of timely immunizations for our children? and then this outreach piece to parents that we're still doing some research and figuring out. Right now, we're implementing the campaign. So our plan, our social marketing planning actually concluded last summer. We have a huge 30-40 page document. I did actually bring an executive summary, which is a condensed version. It's only 2 pages long and outlines some of this process that we've just presented, as well as details more about what our strategy is for this campaign. In the summer, we were in year one of implementation. We've developed the toolkit. We're currently pilot testing it in 4 clinics in the Seattle King County area. We are working with the Group Health Research Institute to evaluate the toolkit use within these settings. We're concluding some campaign branding. We've created a name, and we're in name and logo development phase, and we're in the beginning phases of developing the statewide alliance of partners. We're moving forward and into year two, really this concept of activating parents and how can we really be shifting community norms? We know in Washington 70 to 75% of parents are immunizing. How do we let people know that that's the norm versus questioning, you know, why vaccines and are important? And I really appreciated Stephanie's research, and I'll be following, because it really honed in on things that we can do to activate this group of parents who are immunizing and feel good about their decision to do that. So we'll be conducting more research and help us define an intervention strategy that's really pretty grassroots and community-based. And again, I just want to echo what Michelle was saying. This is certainly a work of many partners in Washington, and I just so appreciate them coming to the table and us doing this work together. Thanks.
Thank you all. That was terrific. And we've got plenty of time for questions. If you have a question, make your way to the microphone in the middle there and shoot away.
Hi, I'm Dawn from the Colorado Children's Immunization Coalition, and I have 2 questions. First for Stephanie, do we have access to actual messages that you tested with those parents on the phone?
Sure. Okay, sure. Great. I can share them maybe afterwards. Give me your card.
Yeah, that'd
sure,
be great.
I'd be happy
be
to do that.
Okay, great. Yeah. Cool. Thank you. And then Jenny and Michelle, thank you so much for your presentation too. I was wondering if you see the parent phase as an external communications with traditional media, or do you have any inklings of how you're going to intervene with parents at this point?
Does this work? Okay. I think it's definitely, certainly social media is going to play. I was in your presentation because I think there's such this virtual community of parents, and I think it's going to be definitely a way for us to connect and use social media as part of that. But I think we also, what's happening, what are the conversations happening within mm-hmm. the community? And I don't have a sense of what that looks like, but I do think we want to focus on a community-based intervention that potentially is mirroring, is this push-pull? So we want the same messages that they're hearing in the provider office is what they're hearing on the playground or in the child care center and other places in the community.
Yeah, and I totally agree with Jenny said, and I think some of it is too, we feel like we need to do more research, which is why we're not just jumping in. We need to get some more kind of follow along with some of the stuff that Stephanie did and stuff, and start testing messages and methods of getting it out and what makes sense and what are parents gonna say is where they're hearing it and where can we, frankly, I mean, some of it is where can we reach the most parents? I mean, what's a make sense as a communication strategy? How can we influence our target audience? So I think we still have more work to do, which is why we've not jumped in that area yet. We know it's an important piece, but feel like we want to put the whole strategy together and not just be trying this or that, seeing if we can
figure out where we're going to have the most bang for our buck.
Cool. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Cook from Washington State, and I have a question for Michelle Mergler. And you put the microphone too far away for me to actually read your name, so if I said it wrong, I apologize. The question that I have is, you defined provider in an office, and you looked at provider attitudes, and you asked parents, and you looked at how provider information influenced parents. But I know that it's not only the doctors in offices or the main provider, be it nurse practitioner or doctor, who gives information to parents. It's also the nurses in the office, the MAs in the office, and actually even probably the secretary who's answering the telephones who passes that on. So I'm wondering, when you were looking at this, did you define provider for the people who were taking the survey, or did you just see provider as the office?
That's a good question. So when we asked the parents, we said identify the providers, and they can put anyone. So you could have naturopath, chiropractor, I think they had like NPH, it could be your provider, a person with a bachelor's degree. Like there's actually probably 20 different unique responses that the parents gave or who their provider was. So we did not limit it to a medical doctor. So if they would indicate that the nurse in the office was their provider, that would have been accepted. So it's sort of who they interpreted as their provider. Did that answer your question?
Did anyone do that?
No one said the secretary, and it's hard to know if they said a nurse, if that was a nurse within a practice with a doctor, mm-hmm. or, I mean, we don't have the data to differentiate that within the entire practice.
Okay, so I'm suggesting that might be an interesting thing to look at, mm-hmm. is how do parents decide? I mean, because I think they get information from everyone in the office. And I think that would be an important thing to look at if you're looking at knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs. Because I know for a fact, anecdotally, that a lot of times either the nurse or the MA talks to parents and influences the feeling that may be around giving vaccines.
Okay, yeah, thank you. That will be a good research topic in the future.
I'd love to respond also, because that's exactly with the provider toolkit. We've been doing implementation training in the various offices, and we have the injection room nurse there, the MAs, and along with the physicians and other nurses there, because we recognize that's a huge source of information. So
great, thanks.
Hi, Chris Caldwell with Becton Dickinson, or BD, and actually my question was very similar to that, so I think that's been responded to, understanding if there's a differentiation in providers between nurses and doctors. But I also wonder if you looked at pharmacists, and I know that at this point that probably is more pertains to flu than some other vaccines, but I'm wondering if you also looked at pharmacist perspectives and the interaction between parents and patients and pharmacists, and if that's similar or different to what we might see in other providers.
Again, I can't remember exactly. I think maybe one person indicated a pharmacist as their primary healthcare provider. I don't know if we got the response from them for the study, but it was very limited of someone indicating that as their primary healthcare provider. But again, it's another interesting place where parents get information from vaccines.
Yeah, I think that would be good to look in. Again, particularly as if there is movement towards pharmacists providing vaccines, I think that could be important. And also maybe to get maybe in front of the curve and get to the pharmacists and doing education there as that area grows. So mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello, I'm Jill Rourke, and I'm a CDC contractor, and I work in Mary's office. And so this is kind of a broad question, comment for the whole group. I was thinking about when you guys were mentioning, Jenny, the OBGYNs that did not feel comfortable talking about immunization because that's not their forte. Has there been any thought and I'm asking this of anyone, about doing research of OBGYNs who are providing HPV vaccine feeling maybe more comfortable with talking about vaccines and kind of taking them from the, you're providing HPV vaccine, have you thought about Tdap for moms who maybe haven't had a pertussis vaccination in a while and protecting their infant, and kind of pushing that all the way to maybe the nurses and physicians in your office talking to women about their child, you know, their child's future vaccinations.
I think that's a very good point. And I know in our office and at HHS, we've talked about reaching out more to OBs, particularly sort of the role they play during H1N1. You know, can we tap into that role they played and sort of expand that? Mm-hmm. And I think I was really struck by your finding, right, that 50% of people start to make decisions in the prenatal setting. And I think there's some opportunities there, both with OBs, but also midwives and doulas and birthing coaches. So I'm curious to learn more. I think that's an avenue for us to start to explore.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, I'm Carol Hondorf. I'm a nurse practitioner, and I work in a university-based clinic that serves about 14,000 children, primarily inner city. And just my comment is that besides what happens inside the office, there's a lot that goes on in the waiting room. And this flu season actually had a mother who came in specifically to get H1N1 for her child. And before she was called in, the other parents in the lobby had dissuaded her from getting the vaccine, and she left with her child. We do try to run on a tape some pro-vaccine messages, but there are a lot of female influencers that take place informally. And also along that same vein, I was wondering about the demographics of the finding that female influencers didn't have much impact, because my experience is that what grandmas and aunts say have a very strong influence primarily on adolescent moms. Mm-hmm. So just some comments.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Janine Corey from the Office of Health Communication, actually Mary's office, and we work closely with Stephanie at HHS. And I just wanted to, people were asking about pharmacists and the OBs, and we are actually planning some research now for this summer to kind of capitalize on how H1N1 built a little bit broader, pushed out people's comfort zones with vaccination, and how we can keep those providers on board, not just for H1N1, but for Tdap and other things, and also understanding that they're talking to pregnant women about vaccines, and here's maybe the first opportunity with a healthcare professional. We're also expanding the idea of looking at healthcare professionals, including medical assistants and other folks who might have direct contact with patients, not just physicians. So that research, it's so new, even Jill in my own office did not know, but we're about to conduct that this summer, so I did want to acknowledge that we are looking at that and starting to talk about that and think about it and take advantage of the fact that OBGYNs are now actually thinking about vaccines, and we're kind of forced to go in depth, and we want to see what they know and what tools they could use.
Janine looks remarkably calm, but at last count, the number of research protocols that they hope to have completed the research for by July was 17. So, yeah, you might have to call her twice if you need to talk to her. Well, help me in thanking these presenters again, because these were terrific presentations.